To set the scene for going further in 1 Peter and now reaching chapter 3, the first 7 verses, to set the scene for that, I want to return to and remember the groundwork that Peter has laid down already. He has established principles that apply across a number of categories of human experience. He's done this as a pattern from chapter 1 on very concertedly in what we've been reading recently to set before the people the nature of their salvation, the truths upon which they depend, the hope that they have, and the place that they have in God's kingdom, the place of belonging, the place as chosen people with such a great hope. He set that all before them as the foundation for every instruction he gives them. What I notice in what we've recently been going through is how uniformly those core principles address each particular in their lives, whatever situation they're in and what they need. One way to put it would be this: how should people who live as displaced persons, if you will, sojourners, non-citizens, it's the kind of terminology he's used for them. How should sojourners who are scattered out in culture that does not acknowledge the faith, the true God, Jesus Christ, or his kingdom, how should they live? And his instruction, again, at these core principles seems to be this: live, in fact, as those who do have an identity. Yes, you're sojourners, pilgrims, displaced persons, non-citizens here, but live in terms of an enduring and very real identity, a belonging that you have with God and his kingdom. And live in such a way as to declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. That's from chapter 2. Live that folks may see your good deeds and glorify God. That's from chapter 2 as well, verse 12. Live as free persons. But don't use freedom. Don't abuse freedom. But live as free. He's commanded them that. Live as free. Live patiently. Live in the strength of hope. Chapter 1, verse 13. Set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. How should we live, we who are sojourners here? And it applies across all these categories. Live according to your citizenship. Live holy, live rightly. No returning evil for evil. We'll see that actually more and more as we read on. No returning evil for evil. And even this, understand the wholesome honor and strength of enduring opposition without lashing back sinfully. We had a little bit more of that last week as we read through. Christ is our example. God, the just judge, we may trust him. We may entrust ourselves to him. God, the just judge. What principles that he's laid down to apply to all of these situations? The last three that we've been dealing with recently are these: that he's spoken to his readers about their situation under unbelieving government authorities, their own situation, Roman Empire, scattered throughout from what is called Asia Minor, but further east, all through modern-day Turkey, in all of those places and locations under the Roman Empire, he gave them instructions. You live as sojourners, but on the ground of those things, here's how to live. He's also addressed even the house servant's life when a master is unreasonable. We mentioned that again last week. In today's verses at chapter 3, again, we've reached chapter 3. In today's verses, he will address, in their situation, wives whose husbands had heard the message of the gospel but refused it. You know, in the unfolding of the gospel going out through all of these areas, not everybody's converted at once, and not whole families all the time. And sometimes there's a convert in the family and the others not. He seems to address very particularly that situation of wives who had come to know Jesus Christ, but whose husbands had both heard and refused. I think you'll hear that that aspect as we read. let's read the first seven verses of 1 Peter 3. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. This is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner, and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. 1 Peter 3, 1 to 7. As I introduced that, I meant to say, in addition, the idea that in these last three categories that Peter has addressed, saying, how shall we live in our circumstance, all three of those are things that relate to interacting with authorities of one kind or another. And I meant to be clearer about that as we entered there. I think we can tell that Peter is, as he goes on from there, expanding his topic a bit, because he does address believing men in the church as to how they should deal with their wives. He goes on, we hadn't read this yet, but in verse 8, he says, finally, all of you, live in harmony with one another, be sympathetic, and he goes on. So he's expanding his topic. But really, those first three topics, I think, function under the category, the real context, I guess, is for them. The context for his instructions in those first three categories really is that situation of conflict that they have. Believing people when governmental authorities may not be in favor. Believing people when for a house servant, when a master is unreasonable. Or in this situation, particularly, I think the principal context from which he addresses the wives at chapter 3 is that situation when their husbands have heard and not believed. One reason I say that so specifically is, as I read verse 1, and it says, if any of them do not believe the word, researching into the original language, the way it conveys that sentence, that not believe can be translated unpersuaded. That's why I say they've probably heard. unpersuaded by. The word has been there and has been around them, but they seem to be unpersuaded. How then should a believing woman live? It's pretty specific here. You know, we're getting into specific life situations. That's where he's at this point with them. One way to describe the calling then in that very particular situation would be this. Godliness is winsome. And he's calling upon them to live for God's honor. Winsome. Character, depth, reverence, purity, beauty of soul, and not just beauty of body or jewelry or fashion, but beauty, deep running beauty of soul, and living in a way that's not contentious, living submissively is the wording. Living peaceably in what seems to me a tranquil strength. Living that they may be won over. That's the wording of verse 1. Living that they may be won over. There's a real connection of goal. It is the representation of the good news of Christ in this unique situation. To live that they may be won. It says one without words. I don't think Peter means to say avoid words. It's just that it's the context of their having already heard and refused this gospel. I think he's commending to them there is another wholesome way of persuasion, if you will, to win. That being this deep running godliness for these women. And all of this, I notice that all of this is perfectly in accord with what he said that is touching on every category we've seen so far. It's like chapter 2, verse 11, dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. I can envision a situation of conflict between husband and wife in Roman culture when husband is not converted. That's not hard to envision. That conflict that would be there, nor in any situation in life where that's the case. But I think it is the core principles, to live for the Lord, to live out your citizenship, to live with a deep running godliness, to turn from all wickedness and to enter in to that for which you were saved. It seems what he's calling them to. I think it's fascinating in verse 3 that he brings up the topic of adornment and beauty. Of what shall your beauty be made? In this context, interestingly, I think in this context he brings that up. And it seems, look at it. It seems as though his instruction assumes that there is a temptation to avoid. Do you get that as you read it? I mean, look at it. Do you get that as you read it? It seems to assume that there could be, in this matter, a temptation to avoid. The quest, what shall we call it, for approval. And I'm trying to investigate this idea. What would that temptation be? The adornment of the outside without attention to the inside. What would that be? Except perhaps a search for approval. to be received as desirable, to be prized. And I imagine, I think even across the board for human beings, that desire probably subconsciously drives a lot more of our actions than we'd like to admit. I'm talking about human beings, men and women, both. That desire to be approved of, thought well of, perhaps that drives subconsciously a lot more of our actions than we'd like to admit. And I think there is a temptation, particularly in this matter of external appearance, that it be the tool by which we would receive back some approval. Through the external, principally, and not internal qualities. I do want to say this. When I come across this, I do want to say this. On one level, genuine level, biblically, attention to one's appearance is not a problem. I want to just say that outright. On one biblical level, attention to one's appearance is not a problem. Biblically, we are to tend, cultivate, beautify everything in creation. Why would we think that there's some special righteousness in leaving the human body unkempt? You know, I think I'll wash less. That'll be righteous. You know, or whatever. So I want to say that. I want to say it outright. There is a healthy kind of attention to physical beauty directed toward glorifying God, the author of beauty, directed toward being a blessing to those around you. There is a wholesome attention to appearance biblically. Again, it seems that the danger would lie in making the external thing the only thing, or the substance of the thing, all the attention given there. I think if there were a shift, if there were an inordinate attention given, it would probably be not out of strength, but out of a fear of not gaining approval. I don't know. I'm trying to explore this idea. What would it be if that were out of balance? What would drive that? And I think perhaps in this very context, that might be part of what's going on. Peter lists a number of things in there. I think it's wonderful to see the many things he lists that are of great worth in God's sight. Those internal things that he listed, including such items as purity and reverence, the inner self, gentleness, a quietness, and I think that's tranquility. I think that really is built upon, if I try to analyze what word is being used and to what end, that gentle and quiet spirit, a tranquility of hope in God, strength there, and all of those things, a number of things of great worth in God's sight. And I think it's wise to set one beside the other and ask about the weight of worth comparatively for hairstyle or a necklace or a dress. Just in the mix of things, the importance of things, I think there is a delightful place for recognizing that God created this world good, that the human beings are the apex of his creation, and he made them beautiful as the author of beauty. There's a delightful place for that, but there is caution because the matter of appearance can be consuming, I think, according to these verses. I have an aside to this. This really is an aside, but I think it's worth bringing up. Some have turned to these verses and concluded that jewelry is inherently sinful. Have you ever seen that or bumped into anyone? I mean, the jewelry is inherently sinful. But there's an almost humorous, rational disconnect that goes on there, which comes to the fore as soon as you read the words in a dramatic, literal fashion. I'm going to give you as literal a reading of these words as I can possibly do by translation. With regard to adornment, because that's the subject matter, there's a fascinating word used for this. These are asides, okay? There's a fascinating word used for adornment. It's cosmos. What's your cosmos? You know, looking at the orderliness of the heavens and how they are adorned and sprinkled with stars. Well, stars. What's your cosmos? How do you adorn yourself? Right? Well, here's the literal reading in verse 3. Let it not be the outward of braiding of hair and of the draping around of gold or the putting on of garments. Okay. Let's say now logically, if you take that and say we've got to rule out use of gold, what also do you have to rule out? Let not your adornment, your cosmos, be outward of braiding hair and draping gold and putting on of garments. Well, I'm hoping it's not ruling out the putting on of garments. But if it doesn't rule out that, neither does it rule out braiding your hair. And neither does it rule out the wearing of jewelry. The whole concept simply addresses the idea. Don't make the garments, the jewelry, the hairstyle, the substance, the only substance of your beauty. Be beautiful in godliness. In the lives of these women whose husbands were not believing, part of that beauty involved dealing with their husbands in wholesome submission. And I'm very concertedly using the word wholesome, because there are models for this submission which are not accurate. You know, there can be a very unhealthy imagined model of what this submission is supposed to look like. But yet I want to affirm, and in no uncertain terms, that in Peter's instruction to these women, part of the beauty, the godliness they could bring to the table in their circumstance is a wholesome submission to their husbands. And the instruction here, I think, has important foundation through the rest of Scripture. How do we understand what men who are husbands are called upon to be and do in a household? How are we to understand that? That's fleshed out elsewhere. It's fleshed out some here. You see it here. Verse 7 and following. You know, you can see it here, but there's more, and that is fleshed out elsewhere. The reality being that husbands are called upon to bear a kind of responsibility for their homes and families. To bear a responsibility, having been entrusted with the care of families. They have been commissioned, called upon. And so that the buck falls there, so to speak. That's the nature of the thing in God's way of putting together the human family. There is a commission, a charge. I'm trying to use every synonym I could think of here, with regard to what God has done in for the benefit of his people. He has given an assignment to husbands. And it is that makes submission appropriate. Does that make sense? It's the cause of the appropriateness for submissive dealings, wife to husband, has to do with the charge God has laid upon husbands and what they're called upon to do. how can I talk about this? I was trying to think of ways. Have you ever heard someone use the phrase, with all due respect? Ah, there are smiles to go with that, right? What's the dynamic of conversation that happens when someone brings that phrase up? Well, with all due respect. Okay. But doesn't the phrase itself give a clue to something that runs deep? There are situations that call for due respect. Oftentimes, when people use that, they're not expressing respect at all. Yeah, well, with all due respect, But can you picture yourself in a situation, any situation, in which you happen, let's say, to disagree with the speaker, and in fact, your relationship with them called for respect? So that the phrase, with all due respect, just simply implies, yes, there is some due here in how you interact. That's part of what I'm trying to arrive at, to get specific about the nature of the thing. It arises again from a charge laid upon husbands. Because of that for which they are responsible, the best godly interaction calls for support rather than contention, to be contentious against, a battler against, in those kinds of things. I'm just trying to describe that. By the way, these verses do not give husbands free rein to subject their wives under them in just any manner soever, how they please. These are not verses husbands ought to appeal to for rights to bring under subjection as they please. That's not the nature of the thing. I was listening to a sermon this week on these verses. The pastor who was preaching said, I had a man in my congregation, that night wasn't from our denomination, it's nobody you know. That I had a man in my congregation whom I was counseling who thought that the implication of verses like these meant that his wife ought to ask him permission to change rooms in the house. I'm going to go to the... I don't know. He said that. He reported that. And I think we know I only use that as an anecdote, but I think we know that verses like this have been abused. And I think that's why, in much respect, our culture has put a negative cast on the whole thing, saying there's nothing to be learned from these verses. But my contention is that there is a godliness. There is, in fact, a beauty, a soul's beauty, to be learned from Peter's instruction here. So what I want to do is go digging as in a mine for treasures. What is that beauty? So what I want to say with regard to husbands and wives, the call for submission, it's not negative inherently. Does that make sense? It's not a negative thing. It is for the good of his people. And just, I think the way to think of it is first and positively with a charge laid upon husbands to take care. It just starts there. Everything flows from that. And of course you see it in this immediate context. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner. There is a situation of calling that could be abused. If husbands were to look at their situation as a situation of power, it's all about my control, that could be abused. Peter says, no, it must not be that way. I think that even the phrase weaker partner has principally to do with their respective calling in the authority category. Not necessarily so much that a woman is physically, if you compare Olympic records and, I don't think it's principally that. I think it has to do with this contrast. So husbands, understand, it's like he's recognizing the potential abuse of it. Understand, you must deal with your wives, or with an understanding. That's what it says, with respect. That's like with understanding as the person in the vulnerable position here. And you remember that they are heirs together with you of the gracious gift of life. And do that so that nothing will hinder your prayers. What an offense to God it is for a position of the calling to take care, being abused, to be taken on as though it's my right to control. That's awful. And they make it a very spiritual matter here. Again, the women instructed here are being instructed in conditions that are not ideal. The best thing I know to say about it is to keep God's purposes in view. The gentleness, the quietness referred to is not spinelessness so much as it is a strength and the confidence not to be contentious against. That kind of tranquility of soul that says, I do not have to lash back. But rather, I can say, what are God's purposes in having ordained the husband-wife relationship for what it is, and serve that. In every respect, I will serve that. I should say that in the same way that we talked before about the call, the biblical call for submission to civil government not being unqualified, like it's just carte blanche, like you just do everything the civil, government tells you. It is the same with husbands and wives. A wife is not called upon to ever deny Christ. Let's imagine in Rome, in the Roman Empire, he asked her to do that. That's very possible. Or, come with me and serve the other gods. That's absolutely possible in their situation. Or, with me, do this, I don't know what it would be, crookedness in business, I don't know what it is, but a woman is never called upon to submit to a husband unto disloyalty to Christ, ever, ever. And I think also it's very important to say that God's principles of protection for the vulnerable must be taken into account. He is just judge. He will hold people accountable. I do not believe that a woman is required to stay without fleeing from a physically abusive situation. And my heart breaks because I actually know people who have been told that from Christian circles. You must stay because, see, you must submit. But I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's not unqualified. In the same way as in the Old Testament, Moses' parents were not required by their submission to civil government to throw Moses into the Nile and kill him. There are principles of morality and of God's passion for the protection of the vulnerable that come to bear here. And I do not believe a woman is required to stay at the risk of physical abuse. I think there's a lot of reaction that comes against verses 6 or verse 6. Sarah called Abraham master. Oh boy, what do you do with what do you do with that? But let's begin with a biblical principle. We must not assume a negative cast of that from our first encounter with it. There is something valuable to be discerned from Peter's commendation of Sarah and how she handled it. There's something to be discovered there of value. I've tried to describe what that would be. It is that support. You have my support. I recognize the burden of your calling before God. And, you know, whatever, however we would describe that. But again, godly women, holy women who hoped in God. There was a respect that they showed that was wholesome. We don't need to read a negative cast on that.